It's Ari Rosenbaum here with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week's subject, we're going to talk about big concepts that 401k plan providers just forget about. Just really common sense ideas about running a business, and it's so often, it's interesting. I'm a big fan of business history and business operations, and there's just so many things over the years that I've seen that really troubles an organization, and they aren't able to maximize their potential in terms of generating revenue, generating goodwill, just being successful business. So anything, as you all know, first things first, we talk about the events that are coming up. And of course, that 401k National Virtual Conference, we want to talk about that one. That's going to be on January 21 and 22 of 2021. Plenty of time still to sign up. The early bird is gone, but still for $33.33, you could sign up for what really will be two fun-filled days with Walt Frazier, Doc Gooden, Retire Hall X, many other great presenters. We're still signing them up as we speak, and sponsors and whatnot. So it's a good, fun event. And go to that 401ksite.com for further information on how you could sign up. But before that national one, we're still going to do one of the smaller virtual ones, and that's going to be on December 18th. It's a Friday, 12 noon. 2 hours, presentations, just getting in the holiday spirit, as they say. Still, it's a little downtime maybe, but actually in this retirement plan business, I always found December 31st to be one of the most more difficult times in the business, because everybody was doing last-minute defined benefit plans and last-minute retirement plans. And of course, thanks to the SECURE Act, they now have up until tax due date to implement a plan for the prior year. So we have some progress. On December 17th, we have that 401k virtual bunch. Our guest for that day, for that time at 4 p.m. Eastern, is Dan Harding from Wealth Prime. Dan Harding is a third-party administrator based out in California, and he's got this software, Wealth Prime, that quite honestly is one of the best things I've ever seen in terms of plan design. Usually when I would be on sales calls, working for a TPA, or even working as an ERISA attorney on my own, trying to get specifications on a plan design, thanks to Dan's software, plan providers such as advisors and TPAs no longer have to wait for the actuary to come out with a plan design proposal. So we'll talk to Dan about the TPA business and what I think is a really great piece of software. And of course, go to LinkedIn and Twitter and whatnot and see the links on how to sign up for those events. And again, that 401ksite.com to sign up for that 401k National Virtual Conference. So let's talk about big concepts that 401k plan providers forget about. If you want to play shrink for a minute, if you've ever read my writings, I write a lot about my times working for a law firm, 2 years at a Long Island law firm, and I also even write about the time as the year that I was a vice president of a synagogue. And, you know, it was always upsetting to me, and I still write about it because it's just not, there's nothing worse to see culture, this kind of culture exists in an organization that paralyzes that organization for maximizing their potential. It's frustrating. It's just, you know, you always think about what might have been, and you know, when you're vice president of a synagogue that's kind of dying and it's been dying for years, and you want to change that, you're running up across the people that caused the synagogue to fail. And it's hard to change culture, and it's hard to recognize certain big concepts. And these organizations, like, you know, that law firm Long Island, which, again, we'll talk about next month, 40% smaller than it was when I was there. And you could see that, you know, 10 years ago, that this was going to be the way it was going to be. same thing with that synagogue. It's further dying. There's no need for them to generate additional members. It's just like they want to die and they're happy with it. And it's frustrating. Which, you know, I just wrote an article which touched upon that scene in the Poseidon Adventure. And I'll probably talk about it again. It's a great scene where Reverend Scott is talking to the chaplain right after the ship capsized. And Reverend Scott goes up to the chaplain and says, you know, why don't you come with us? You know, the ship capsized, it's upside down. And the idea is you got to go to the bottom of the ship, which is now at the top, to get for a rescue to be. And that was the best way. And the chaplain, I think it's Chaplain John, played by Arthur O'Connell, says, you know, I know I can't save these people, but I can't leave them. And Reverend Scott is like so like disappointed. What's it all been for? I mean, can't you save yourself? And, you know, the cultural organizations, they can't change. They don't want to change. They see nothing wrong. And they will ignore these kind of tidbits that, you know, I've seen over time that have afflicted organizations and really paralyze them from really maximizing their potential. And it's really disheartening to see. So let's get from the get-go, as they would say. Number one, I think a big concept that most providers really forget about is the really simple term, the client is always right. And I always say, well, the client is always right. In the retirement plan business, I will always say it's, you know, you got to put an asterisk on it. The reason I put an asterisk on it is for a couple of reasons. Number one, the customer is always right is a really old adage. It was, I think it was a British department store that used it. And it's an adage to convince customers that they will get great service and convince employees to give great, to give customers great service. It doesn't really mean that the customer is always right. And, you know, I can tell you that anytime you're at a store at customer service and people are trying to, you know, get a refund on an item that's, you know, out of, that they no longer sell. I have a friend of mine who was a serial returner, and he would go and buy something from like 1 or 2 years ago and then try to return it. And the only time he ever got caught was one time he went to IKEA to return a table that he had for about 2 or 3 years. And he moved from Virginia to another part of the country, and he goes to the local IKEA and he says, you know, I just bought this in Virginia. I'd like to return it. And they said, you know, we haven't had that, you know, item in stock, this table for 3 or 4 years now. So ultimately he was foiled. But, you know, it's a basic concept that, you know, plan sponsors should get great service. It doesn't mean that they're always right. You know, obviously, when you have a plan sponsor client that, you know, has a late deferral issue or a VCP issue that just requires correction and they don't want to do it, they're not always right. They're wrong. You're going to have to fire a client if you're a TPA and they refuse to fix a plan when you're in the business as a TPA of administering plans correctly. But, you know, the adage is really about avoiding giving clients poor service, you know, not returning phone calls, neglect, ignoring, you know, it's funny that plan sponsor clients sometimes leave over the smallest things, and it's, you know, not returning the phone calls or not being, you know, forthright with what's going on. You know, I've had clients mishandled by TPAs, and I've been working, I work for TPAs where we mishandle clients. You know, many years ago, I worked for a TPA where we got advisors fired from a plan after we got fired. So, you know, it's just a basic concept of business. Customer is always right. Provide great customer service. That's what it's all about. Next on the list is, you know, it doesn't cost you to say sorry. I've had blood feuds I wouldn't say blood feud. I've had feuds with people simply over the fact that they will not apologize. Like somehow some people, you know, narcissists, for example, they don't, they feel like apologizing is kind of like admitting liability in a lawsuit. And apologizing's not. Apologizing, sometimes you apologize and you're not even wrong. But you just say sorry just to diffuse the situation. But there's some people that will take that to the grave where they will not apologize for something that they did. And, you know, people will say that I'm stubborn, but, you know, I don't believe that you can forgive people who don't think they did anything wrong. You know, you'll see posts on Facebook where people say, well, you know, forgive them in your heart, even if they don't, you know, apologize. And that's letting people off scot-free. You know, a lot of plan providers don't want to apologize. They would rather die on a hill, as they say. You know, it's a hill they would die on by not apologizing. I had a client many years ago. I think I've talked about it so many times. Handled by a TPA that I knew. The top heavy test was done incorrectly. It was a law firm, so one of the, you know, law firms have named partners, and it really was a simple thing where one of the named partners had a wife and daughter working for the firm. I think the wife was maybe in human resources, or actually, I think the wife was in accounting and the daughter was in human resources. But anyway, attribution rules means that, you know, the two of them would have been key employees irregardless of their salary. But the law firm, the TPA didn't pick up that rule. There was a administrator of the plan who was working on the plan for 15 years. I mean, had 15 years in the business and didn't understand that. And they said the plan passed, satisfied top heavy, when it clearly didn't. So years later, they went to a new TPA, voila, they find a mistake, and we bring it to the old TPA's attention. Look what you did. You screwed this up. They have to make a corrective contribution, and it's going to cost them. And what are you going to do about it? And the plan, the TPA, rather than admitting the mistake, said it was the fault of the client. You know, they did get a settlement out of that TPA, but, you know, what's the point? I mean, when you're, you know, sometimes sorry doesn't really cost you. For some TPAs, obviously saying sorry may require them to correct the problem. I just had a phone call with a custodian / BD with some issues on a solo 401k where they're willing to say that they're sorry and willing to eat the fee on a corrective action that's got to be done with, you know, a client's plan. You know, so many times TPAs will just shift the blame on the plan sponsor when it's clearly the TPA's fault. And apologizing to me is not the end of the world. I've seen clients leave TPAs just because of a simple mistake that was done, and they are angry that the TPA just didn't come out and say, you know, we screwed up. We're not going to screw it up going forward. We made a mistake, and we'll fix it, or whatever it is. It's interesting how people will, you know, like I said, they will willing to die on a hill rather than apologizing. Next, one concept that, you know, a big concept that 401k plan providers really forget about, it's a relationship-driven business. Rich Lorito was a good friend of mine. I always talk about him. I worked with him for 9 years working for third-party administration firms. He was the top salesperson that I knew, and I will always joke and say that, you know, as great as Rich was, Rich couldn't spell 401k if I spotted him the 4, the O, the 1, and the K. And he realized that. You know, there's a lot of people in this business who can't spell 401k, sell 401k plans, or even, you know, administer 401k plans, and they won't admit it. Rich admitted it. Rich knew that, you know, when it was a sales pitch and he needed expertise, he'd bring me on a sales pitch, or he'd bring on the actuary on the phone and try to, you know, help people out. And, you know, some of the greatest people in this business, you know, Rich taught me one thing, is that it's a relationship-driven business. Rich Lorito was the type of guy who would be a friend to anybody. He had that great rapport with people, and that's what made him a great salesperson. Years later, I mean, he has been gone now for, 13 years. 13 years. He died in 07. There are people who still remember him. Some of the greatest people I've met in this retirement business, like Bill Shorey's and Matt Curtin and Jamie DeRobertis. These are, you know, good friends of mine in this business, and these are people that I met through Rich. Larry Davis, who just called me this morning to remind me that this Friday would have been our Las Vegas event had COVID not taken place, which would have been great. I met Larry through Rich. So whether you're dealing with clients or other plan providers, you got to realize that the retirement plan business is a relationship-driven business. You know, how you act with clients and, you know, other providers go a long way because, you know, really develops your reputation. And, if you mishandle it, if you mishandle clients and mishandle plan providers, your reputation suffers and people remember that. You know, I knew somebody in the TPA business. When I mentioned that name in a BD local office, I was told that person was not allowed in that BD local office because he had stolen business from a broker that referred business. When you have a bad reputation, people know that. When you have a good reputation, people know that. And it's a relationship-driven business. We're national in scope, but it's very close knit. Word travels very, very fast. And, you know, how, you know, a plan provider deals with those relationships will really indicate whether they have a solid or terrible reputation in the retirement plan business. Next on the hit list is communication is key. A lot of providers, I'm sure they never reach out to their clients during COVID. That would have been a problem. When dealing with plan sponsor clients, some plan providers have a set it and forget it mentality with them. That means once the plan provider contacts them annually or semi-annually, the plan sponsor never hears from them. I will say that almost every relationship I've ever had in life and in business that faltered was because of a lack of communication. There's so many reasons you can lose a client, but, you know, a lack of communication is just one of those mistakes that you could easily avoid. So whether you're using a newsletter or returning a phone call or, you know, you make a huge mistake by not checking in and reaching out to your clients every now and then. And another big problem with communication is not dealing with the frequency problem, but the language problem. I think it's important for plan providers to write in a language that their audience will understand. So if you're going to write something for a plan sponsor, don't write it as if you're sending it out to an ERISA attorney. Don't send it out that you're writing it to an actuary. Write communication to an audience that will understand. That's really, really important. So, you know, when you're out of sight, you're out of mind. So it's really important for plan providers to communicate regularly with their clients and avoid, the idea that, I needed you, I couldn't find you, you weren't there, I don't know where you are. Especially like in a time like this, especially with COVID, this was the time not to be out of sight, out of mind. Next on the list is getting ahead of change. One of the most frustrating parts of working for others and working for a handful of organizations was that resistance to change that I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. Going back with ancient history, the most frustrating experience in my life while I'm in business was the 2 years that I worked for this law firm. You know, as an associate, I had a tough time getting work. My goal was to start a national ERISA practice, and I really thought that with our existing clientele of very important Long Island businesses, that the partners of the firm could refer me work, and that would just really help generate my business, and for some reason, the partners never wanted to refer me work, even though they would get 50 cents of every buck in my billables for their clients. So my idea after that was, how do I get clients? And I said, well, you know, let me write articles that plan providers could use to generate business. And, you know, if they get business out of it, they're going to remember me when they have any type of ERISA attorney needs. So The problem over there is we had a law firm bureaucracy, and to get an article done, from writing it to getting it published, there was one article. It took 6 months. We had an advertising committee. We had different levels of partnership to go through. I had to send it to the ERISA attorney, who didn't do any work with single employer plans, and she'd have to review it. And the advertising committee, which was one person who was an associate who never drew a dime business. And, you know, he's the guy who said, you know what, social media violates New York attorney rules on advertising, which was nonsense because social media, if done correctly, is not advertising. You know, it would take 6 months to get an article done. I had, again, this advertising committee saying that I couldn't use social media. We had a managing attorney who thought social media was like, you know, I always jokingly say selling fish out of the trunk of my car, which is a to me a Long Island, New York City thing. I don't know if they do in other states or cities, but like on Route 110 in Long Island or on Sunrise Highway, there's always somebody selling fruit or fish out of the trunk of their car, lobster tails or whatever it is, and it's like she had such disdain for social media, so I always compared it to that. You know, I knew back then that law firm was really way behind the times. You know, one of the people who worked there in marketing who left later told me that he told the managing attorney that the average age of partnership was, the average age of the senior partners were like 60-something. And that's old. Kind of reminds me of the time when Escalade first came out and they did a study and the average age of a Cadillac buyer was 67. You know, that's a problem. So anyway, you know, older attorneys don't understand social media. You know, they know about the cocktail lunch and schmoozing and going out and playing golf. But, you know, social media is the new way of going out and playing golf. That's how I see it in getting yourself out there. You know, for example, just this week, a few months back, I wrote an article about the VCP process, you know, self-correction and voluntary correction programs. And as a result of the article, I had a broker reach out to me with a client's issues that, you know, do need VCP issues to be fixed. And that's how you get clients, Lois. I mean, it's not brain surgeon. It's not brain surgery. I'm sorry. So again, 10 years later, the law firm's 40% smaller. When I was there, I think they had 5 offices. Now they're down to 3. But you could tell 10 years ago that this was going to happen. Social media, 10 years ago, you knew that social media was going to be the next big thing and how to build a business and build a reputation. And they're behind the times, and I still think to this day their social media engagement is terrible. I know the person who's now in charge of marketing, because the great person that I knew there left a long time ago. They're just still haven't really got ahead of that change. They're still behind the eight ball, and that's why they went from one of the top 3 or 4 law firms on Long Island. Now I think they're probably out of the top 10, certainly. But reminding me of change always reminds me of, you know, I don't know what I ate for breakfast yesterday, but there's certain things that I remember what people tell me. Because when people tell me something that it's so incredibly good, you just want to save it and remember it. And when I first started out as an ERISA attorney, I was replacing she was on the verge of retiring. She wanted to retire eventually, was a paralegal by the name of Marge Tracy. Marge taught me, you know, a lot more than any textbook in law school could have about ERISA and 401k plans and whatnot. And I didn't appreciate Marge at the time because I was younger and she was a pain in the rear end to work with and just really sarcastic. But I appreciate, you know, when you're older, you appreciate people a lot more. And I think the thing that Marge taught me that I will never forget is Marge worked in the 401k, well, she worked in the retirement plan space before ERISA, before 401k plans. And she said to me, you know, there were a lot of TPA firms and a lot of other plan providers that couldn't deal with the changes caused by the Tax Reform Act of 1986, which substantially changed retirement plans with discrimination testing and compensation limits, and really changed what really at the time qualified plans was kind of a more wild, wild west in terms of plan discrimination and funding and all that stuff. And she said to me, a lot of firms couldn't deal with the changes by the Tax Reform Act of 86, and they went out of business. And, you know, they couldn't adjust to the change, and they just went out. And so there, if there's any change in retirement plan business, that means that, and, you know, the thing with changes is that any time the retirement plan business, when we had a change, we saw it with fee disclosure. Quite a few businesses, TPA firms, insurance companies, they just left the business because they knew that they could not effectively compete in a transparent fee environment. Last but not least on my hit list is marketing. I would definitely say that most of the marketing stuff that you see by plan providers sucks. I'm not a great marketing genius. I never took a marketing course. I do get by. For most of you who aren't like me and have a knowledge of InDesign and how to create articles and layout and all that kind of stuff, keep in mind that they are retirement plan that there are marketing companies that are experts in retirement plan business. There are quite a few. Sherry Fitz, Samantha Russell, Rebecca Hurahan are just some of the people that you could, that a plan provider could go out and seek out to help with marketing. If you have, if the provider has no marketing experience. And I think that that's really something that a lot of plan providers forget. There's so many good TPA firms, very small good TPA firms that nobody knows about because, they only get clients by word of mouth. But if you have great marketing, your stature in the business could be quite amazing. We've seen a lot of good plan providers that have skyrocketed just because of excellent marketing. Jake Rushton to me is like somebody, 401k Jake, I just think his marketing is just brilliant, very viral. I'm really amazed by the stuff that he does. The Retireholics, excellent, excellent marketing. And marketing can go a long way to growing a business. That's why I believe that, plan providers should not be giving it any, not giving it short shrift. So these are, again, the big concepts that most 401k plan providers forget. And I think as a plan provider, these are some things that you should not be forgetting because it really can negatively impact your business. It's Ari Rosenbaum. Thank you for listening to this podcast and hope you stop by next week. And of course, go to that 401ksite.com for more information, more articles, and of course, signing up for that 401k National Virtual Conference. Thanks. Bye.